Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on this week's programme.
It seems like Athens is becoming a point of weekend point, what I call. Before it was like we seen tourists from March until October, now it's all year round.
Monocle produces a series of hardback city guides with a few interesting twists. One of these is that as well as the best bars and hotels, we also point you in the direction of interesting urbanism. So, to coincide with the release of our new Athens book, we asked Monocle's Venetia Rainey to take the temperature of the city that she currently calls home. She spent the past few weeks speaking to urbanists, artists and business owners to find out the challenges and opportunities facing the city, and even ended up joining a demonstration. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. Venetia, we've had two images of the city in recent years. One from our holidays, which is well embedded actually for many years, which is, you know, this sunny city of the Acropolis and all the things we know about it. And on the other side, the problems that came from the financial crash and austerity and the sense of a city of, you know, actually quite deep poverty in some places and crumbling and not very well looked after. You've moved there. You're part of the urban fabric. Tell us where the city is and if those kinds of images really hold true.
I think those two images do hold true. There is a lot of poverty. Austerity has had a massive effect on the city and on the country at large. But there is also a sunny side to the city. There's a lot of great stuff. There are a lot of great restaurants and shops and hotels opening up. And the city is trying to move forward. And that involves acknowledging the problems that are there and also trying to find creative solutions. So austerity has meant that the municipality, the city hall, doesn't have much money to spend on big projects, but there's a lot of grassroots stuff happening and they're trying to regenerate the city in their own way, thinking of clever solutions that bring together existing actors rather than spending loads of money on big projects.
Well, that's a point I wanted to touch with, because I guess when you haven't got a lot of money, you're dependent on people coming up with bespoke solutions. But the problem for Athens is that many clever people have come to London and Paris and New York to set up architecture practices and design practices. But before we hear your reports, did you meet quite a lot of people who have decided to stay and fix neighbourhoods and do pieces of urbanism that are having an impact?
I did, and that was really a running theme. The crisis in Athens has really inspired a lot of people to step up and take responsibility and fill that gap that was left by the government. And although people are starting to come back, there are a lot of people who really just chose to stay. And even though their jobs weren't really working for them, tried to find another sort of employment that would contribute to the city continuing to grow and evolve in some way.
Well, let's have a listen to all the people that Venetia met.
Hello there, this is Nick Barpakis on behalf of the Alternative Tours of Athens team. Welcome to Athens. We're now standing on Monastiraki Square in the very central part of Athens, a meeting point for all people of Athens and tourists alike, right beneath the rock of the Acropolis.
And we can actually see the Acropolis up there in the corner. There's also some sort of Ottoman-style architecture. There's some newer neoclassical architecture. There's some modern stuff. Pigeons everywhere, tourists, balloons. It's really the heart of the city for a visitor.
Yeah, it's one of the main squares of the centre, next to Syntagma Square as you walk down. Very strong merchant point, full of shops and cafes, people passing by, cars, you know, traffic. Typical Athens image, if you can imagine that, right?
Nick is one of several people who work for Alternative Tours of Athens, a tourism company set up in 2011. Theirs is a familiar story in Greece. With the economy at a standstill, the founders needed another way to make a living. Unlike many others, however, they decided that they would do it by trying to show another side to their city, taking people beyond the clichés of picturesque ruins and museums of ancient objects. From modern architecture to local design to politics, they researched a number of different themed tours to be led by locals. Nick took on street art, which is ubiquitous in Athens.
What started as a great concept between the team was my chance to fill together all the information I had about the street art scene from the late 90s when I moved to Athens until today, which seems to be a very rich scene and definitely has a story to tell. I'm mainly, let's say, the street guy. I walk around and show walls. That can be really interesting at times.
All right, well, let's go for a little wander and see what we can look at.
Yeah. We're now entering Psiri, next to Monastiraki. You can find lots of posters stencils, graffiti, people just expressing what they feel like or writing the name on the wall. You find people doing their crafts or having little shops, day shops, next to bars, of course. And many tourists that come here. There's a lot of street art also, big murals next to tags and busy for the eye. Maybe the one of the reasons, maybe the main reason, that we have a lot of graffiti in Athens and street art in general is because of the fact that policemen are dealing with different things. And some of it is good, some of it is not that good. Right above Psiri Square, the central part of Psiri, above all the tables and the people eating, having snacks or a drink, you can find big murals, like this one. What we have is a very interesting mixture of elements, something you'd get out of a magazine, exaggerated faces and images of nice lifestyle superheroes.
Huge smiles and beautiful eyes and perfect moustaches.
Yeah, it's like an advertisement. There's no product, but he's selling something. He's making something like an ironic statement, I think.
And it's worth pointing out that also there is a lot of just tags scrawled on the buildings around here at the bottom. So there's lots of different types of graffiti going on here, and it's not all of this very high level of street art.
Sometimes it's not really art if you really want to scrutinize. It's just people trying to pass their name and make themselves heard. Or even political slogans, you know, even football clubs. Whatever you feel like painting on the wall. With markers, brushes, spray cans, by all means necessary.
What's painted on this wall then?
Well, smash fascism, that's what it says.
And it's been crossed out?
Yes. You will find that very often, that political slogans, especially the ones that are really, let's say, explicit, are being either painted over in an attempt of the owners of the houses to clean out, or the opposite supporters, let's say. There's a lot of social unrest, let's say, because of what had happened after 2008. A couple of things coincided. Athens and Greece is going through some difficult times, let's say, and it reflects on the walls.
Difficult times is one way to put it. In the credit crunch that followed the 2008 global financial crash, numerous countries in Europe had to request bailouts and implement strict austerity measures in order to stop them from going bankrupt. None came closer, or have had to go further to get back on track, than Greece.
Greece is on the verge of default tonight, hours from what many believe is a near certainty it will miss a Tuesday deadline to pay back more than $1 billion to the International Monetary Fund.
The country has received nearly 300 billion euros in loans, the biggest bailout in history. Round after round of spending cuts requested by creditors have left Greece a shell of its former self. The economy has shrunk by a quarter, hundreds of thousands of young people have emigrated, and nearly half the country's elderly have been pushed below the poverty line. During one of the worst years, 2015, there were weekly protests outside Parliament in Syntagma Square. Images of masked demonstrators violently clashing with security forces regularly made international headlines.
We had some difficult times, as all you know and seen on TV. We had some very difficult times in the past.
That's Pavlos Yiannopoulos, who has run his news kiosk in the square almost every day for the past 30 years.
Syntagma Square, it's the constitution, that's what Syntagma Square is, the constitution square, which is sort of the center of the city. Here's the parliament. It's the center of the city. All the political changes and all the political demonstrations, they come through here.
These days, however, things are looking up. The bailouts are over. The economy is predicted to grow by 2% this year. And Syntagma Square is filled with sightseers and shoppers rather than protesters and police. Things seem to be returning to normal, and tourism has reached an all-time high. Like many people, Pavlos is optimistic.
It seems like Athens is becoming a point of weekend point, what I call. You know, people come and visit for weekends more and more. Before it was like we've seen tourists from March until October, now it's all year round.
Around 5.5 million people are expected to have visited Athens this year, a record number. And the boom in tourists has given the city a real boost, with new restaurants, shops, cafes and hotels popping up all over the place.
Hello.
I'm here to see Anastasia.
Anastasia, your name is?
Venetia Rainey.
Yeah, okay.
One of the city's latest and loveliest additions is Perianth, a design hotel right in the historic centre of Athens that opened over summer. Set up by siblings Anastasia, Alexandra and Kon Skoubopoulos, it aims to offer something for a more discerning visitor that captures both the old and the new in the city. Marketing director Anastasia explains more.
I think the idea is neoclassical Athens, but with a modern twist. And because the building was a streamlined Art Deco architecture, I think the architects worked a lot around that. And they've tried to use different type of Greek elements, like the mosaic, which was all made from the beginning, Greek marble from different places in Greece. Even this glass, was very usual in Athenian buildings in the 50s. I think we wanted the urbanness of the city to be shown in the hotel. We wanted this roughness, but at the same time with an elegance that could make it feel more upscale.
As we walk to one of the rooms, Anastasia takes me through corridors lined with an eclectic variety of contemporary Greek art. Their way of gently showing visitors there's more to see in Athens than just marble busts and terracotta pots.
We can go to the rooms.
She shows me into a fourth floor room with custom-made furniture and a view of the Acropolis from the bed. As we take in the view, Anastasia explains that although the tourism boom has been great for business, from a resident's perspective, it's also come with negatives.
You can see tourists everywhere, in Plaka especially, because it's close to where I live. You can hardly walk in the pedestrian streets. During the summer months, it's become a bit hectic for us. Okay, it's not like Venice in the summer, but it's a lot and traffic has become quite worse. I'm not afraid of that kind of tourism, but I believe that we don't have the infrastructure to cope with that many more tourists as a city, as a country, as a government.
The lack of pavement space and pressure on roads is a problem, but the biggest concern for most is the pressure on the housing market. As more and more tourists come, the lure of opening yet another faux taverna or Airbnb-ing that apartment rather than renting it to locals just gets greater and greater. The cafes in the historic neighbourhoods of Monastiraki, Plaka and so on may be full of Greeks getting their daily coffee fix, but those same people are slowly but surely being priced out of the centre of their own city.
Actually, yes. When we began to make tours, this area was not touristic at all. And now, as you can see, it's like full of hotels and full of restaurants again and very, very touristic also.
Maria Petinaki is one of the founders of Alternative Tours of Athens. Since the company started, the ongoing touristification of downtown Athens has meant she's had to change the routes of her tours just to make sure she's not further contributing to the problem. She thinks there needs to be a government policy on housing, especially when it comes to Airbnb.
There is a bit of political discussion that begin to happen around this issue because people begin to feel the negative effects of it. But still, right now, the policies announced are more in the direction about how much we're going to focus on tourism and how much this is working for the city and how much investments are coming. And so it was such a long time that there was a need for investments to come that I don't think that there's a lot of people hearing the negative effects right now.
But while legislation on Airbnb might be a way off, the government is intervening in the city's urban fabric in other ways.
So what are we looking at right now?
We're looking at the map. I'm trying to get you familiar to the town plan of Athens because one of the objectives of Athens Anaplasis is to focus on the historical urban fabric and rejuvenate the parts of it that needs more attention. Because of the economical crisis and several things that caused the situation that we are experiencing last years.
Katerina Christoforaki is an architect and engineer, currently studying for a PhD in urban planning. She's also part of Athens Anaplasis, a brand new private company set up by the government to fix the city on a budget, 50,000 euros to be precise. The aim is to bring existing actors together to work more coherently. They won't be building or changing anything themselves. She leads the technical team. As we walk through the city, Katerina tells me about the range of projects Athens Anaplasis is working on. There's an underground river they want to uncover and reopen to the public, a neglected hilltop theatre they want to renovate, a cluster of crumbling flats for refugees they want to repair, and unused buildings they want to fill with new purpose.
So where are we going now?
We're walking towards Exarchia.
But it's in Exarchia, the so-called anarchist neighbourhood, that the company has already scored a major win. The bubbling, gritty heart of the area, Exarchia Square, was due to be gutted in order to add a gaping entrance to a new metro station beneath. Athens Anaplasis not only managed to convince them to shrink the exit and put it just outside the square, they also came up with a nifty additional suggestion. Add a larger exit further away on a wide but unused road right by two key buildings, the National Archaeological Museum and Athens Polytechnic University.
We would like to use this place in order to connect the two institutes. We would love to see the museum opening to the street and also the university opening to the street and creating a union, these two. The metro station would help do that. This would become an axis, bringing tourists, bringing students. This street would be alive. So this is a win-win situation. So we hope that this area will become a core of culture, of education, tourist pole. We can also connect the two museums, archaeological and also the Museum of Acropolis. There is a metro station at the Acropolis Museum. Now let's bring one here. And we also suggest that the metro station is renamed from Exarchia to Museum Exarchia.
It's this kind of thinking that's helping Athens evolve. The last decade has been a difficult one, but it's also been formative, with many residents rising to the occasion and filling the gaps left by government in various ways. In terms of urbanism, for example, grassroots initiatives such as Athenistas have formed to spruce up dingy alleyways, install public benches, and improve pedestrian signage. The crisis has inspired a renewed sense of camaraderie, a reclaiming of responsibility for the city. It's energised Athenians and created a more active and engaged community. Nowhere is this more obvious than in the culture scene. Athens has seen a burst of new galleries in the last 10 years, as well as the partial opening of the National Museum for Contemporary Art, known as the EMST. In 2017, it also hosted the 14th Documenta Festival, marking the first time the famous contemporary art exhibition left its home of Kassel, Germany. Its summer festivals, held under the stars and epic ancient amphitheatres, increasingly attract well-known international performers, while the recently opened Stavros Niarchos Foundation Cultural Centre, designed by Renzo Piano, has further boosted the city's credentials. Amid it all is the Athens Biennale, an avant-garde art exhibition that began in 2007 in a bid to put Athens on the map. Run by artist and curator Poka Yu, it takes place in various unused landmark buildings and is a feast for the senses. So I've come to one of this year's venues, the old telecommunications building, to meet him for a tour. We're now on the fourth floor. We've taken the elevator up, and you said this is your favourite floor. Why is that?
This is a strange floor. You can try to see this piece maybe here.
It's a door that you can't quite open. There's like a wind pushing against you. That's quite creepy.
It's quite creepy. Yes, and this inability to make sense of what is happening is something that kind of defines our times.
So this is a very politically engaged Biennale, right?
Amongst other things, we like to see it as a place in which we confront all the reaction that has been brewing all these years in Greece, but also globally. The political situation, the rise of the alt-right and fascism, the constraints of liberty, and also the possibility of us navigating in an endless pool of possibilities through our digital personas. How this potentiality also brews some angst and some dystopic future. The impossibility to address the present, make something valuable for the future. And the theme of the 6th Athens Biennale, is something that maybe was born during the years of crisis here in Greece, but it's something global now that we are all facing, at least in the Western world.
As he shows me around the Biennale's exhibits, he tells me that the crisis has helped rebrand Athens as a place of alternatives and opportunities, attracting artists, cultural workers and researchers from all over the world. The city has finally become a metropolis, he says.
to qualify a city as a metropolis needs to meet some metrics, some standards. And Athens, it seems, but now has reached that tipping point which can be classified as a metropolis. But also this is something that we live. We live it and we experience that. So it's more multicultural. Many things are happening at the same time. Therefore, all this vibrancy has created from this oblivious state, has set the spotlight on Athens, and it has become something like an alternative to the big metropolises of Europe.
Still, he thinks much more work needs to be done to nurture the art scene. The Biennale, for example, is still mostly run by volunteers.
It seems that there's no, and this has always been the case, no central planning for strategy for the future. One should prioritize culture over other things. I think that it pays off if you do. And it's obvious now. It's one of the only, if I dare say that, industries that are flourishing in Athens right now. Tourism is the other. I would say invest in infrastructure and also water these grassroots. Because there are a lot of grassroots, we have to keep them operational and give some incentives to the people working here. There have never been funds for the artists, for example. This is something that me as an artist have witnessed and have suffered in the past, and all the younger generations also. There are no funds for the arts, no grants or whatever.
This grassroots culture has even extended to dealing with one of the thorniest issues facing the world today, refugees. Greece has been on the front line of it all, with more than 1 million people crossing its border in 2015 and early 2016. Despite more than €1.5 billion in funding from the EU, around 60,000 refugees around the country continue to live in squalor, including about 14,000 crammed into internationally condemned camps on islands such as Lesbos. Something had to be done. I've come to City Plaza, a three-star hotel just outside the city centre. Well, it was, until it went bankrupt following the 2008 crash. It lay derelict and empty until April 2016, when a group of radical-thinking Athenians decided to take things into their own hands and put it to use. They broke in, occupied it, and opened it up to refugees looking for a decent place to live. This is not just an ordinary squat. They want it to be an example of what can be done without government assistance and a public challenge to how countries treat the people on the margins of society. Nassim is one of City Plaza's participants.
It is counterexample to the camps. It's a project carrying this demand of the closure of the camps and the transfer of the people in the city, which means more dignified life for the people who are refugees coming to Europe. And also it's a project which is putting this question of what we do in general with the empty public or private buildings in the city. What does it mean, this need of people to have spaces and the empty buildings that they will collapse because no one takes care of them? Not only in Greece, but it can be an example of similar question in all Europe. Thousands of people are homeless and thousands of buildings are empty. And the question is how we can make this connection of the homeless people or the people in need with the empty places that they need people. This is Plaza.
City Plaza is now home to 400 refugees from up to 15 countries. The idea is that everyone runs the place together, taking joint responsibility for cleaning, cooking and other activities. There's 24-hour electricity and water, security and chances to look for work or get an education. Everything, in short, that's missing from the camps. It's hugely political, but then that's not exactly something Athenians are shy about. Every year on November 17th, the country remembers the student uprising of 1973, when people occupied the National Polytechnic University and protested against Greece's military dictatorship. The ruling junta crushed the demonstration by driving through the university's locked gates with a tank. It was the beginning of the end for military rule in Greece, and the events of that time have become part of the Greek school curriculum. Ever since, people have marked the day by marching through the streets of Athens to remember the fight against fascism and the struggle for democracy. Most of the city shuts down, and hundreds of riot police line the streets. I caught up with a few demonstrators, who didn't want to give me their names, to ask why they were there.
Does it still feel relevant today, what happened in 1973?
Yes.
Yes,
why?
Very much.
What does it mean to you?
Because
we may not have a military dictatorship, but as all the world knows, Greece has many problems. And we can make many connections about then and today, about the protest of the days then.
Like what?
Like the Memorandum of Understanding on our days to then. It's not exactly the same, but you can make the connection.
You feel like you don't have enough say in the rule of your country?
Yes, I don't have enough say.
In between chanting slogans about freedom and social justice, they said that despite coming on the march, in general they were optimistic about the city's future.
From 3 years ago, it's better now. Something it starts to slowly, but something it starts to moving. In not very high salaries, but we can start to begin a more normal life. Something it's going to seem a little bit better.
And for a city that's been so battered over the last decade, that's definitely good news. For Monocle in Athens, I'm Venetia Rainey.
Well, that was a great report there by Monocle's acting business editor, Venetia Rainey. Monocle's travel guide to Athens is available at all good bookstores now, or, of course, at monocle.com. And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show was produced by Carlotta Rebello, and it was edited by David Stevens. And to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's Imam Beyeldi featuring Vempo with Posso Lipame. Thank you for listening, city lovers. Πριν αγνωρίσω εσένα που χρώσουμε ένα καιρό.